Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It was March 24th when we learned that the first Iowan had died of COVID-19. Back then, we were hopeful that we could slow the spread of the disease and turn the tide of the pandemic. Maybe even that in our state with a small population and wide open spaces, things would be different. It's been 5 months, and Iowa has passed a grim milestone. More than 1,000 Iowans are dead from COVID-19, and yesterday we learned that a child, 5 years old or younger, has died. Another thing this virus has taken from us is the kind of ritual we take comfort in when someone dies. Funerals are different. Gatherings are dangerous. Hugs can spread disease. The tracking of the virus and recording of statistics has turned lives into numbers. Political divisions and the stigma of disease have left many in silence. This hour, we're going to take some time to remember and mourn the Iowans who have died of COVID-19, not as numbers or statistics, but as men and women, people who loved and were loved. People like Ben Newton, 50 years old, of Fort Dodge. He was the first person to die of COVID-19 in Webster County, and one of his last conscious acts was to write a love note to his wife, who was also sick with COVID at the time. Jerry Hearn was 93 years old, of Marion. According to her obituary, she loved her family unconditionally, and her interests were making quilts, sewing, crafting, and reading. Kenneth Jones of Alta was 60. A maintenance worker who worked at Tyson Foods in Storm Lake. He left behind his wife and two children. His youngest is 9. Gail Isaac, better known as Muggs, was 71 years old. He and his wife of 51 years had just returned from vacation before he got sick. This hour, I'll talk with Iowans who've lost loved ones, reporters who've been telling the stories of those who've died, and funeral director Michael Lensing. We also want to hear from you. If you've lost a loved one to COVID-19, please call and share a memory at 866-780-9100 or email their name and something you want people to know about them to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Under different circumstances, I believe that the loss of so many Iowans would have brought us together for memorial marches, candlelight vigils, or other collective acts of mourning. But of course, everything is different right now. And for me, it's been difficult to process my grief or even grasp the magnitude of our loss. And I don't think I'm alone. West Des Moines United Methodist Church has been marking the losses each week with the tolling of their bells. Last night, they rang their church bell 1,000 times as people gathered together, but apart, nearby. As we start today's program, please join me for a minute of silent reflection. Let's listen to the sound of the bells and think about the people we've lost. Those are the bells of West Des Moines United Methodist Church ringing 1,000 times yesterday to mark the loss of more than 1,000 Iowans to COVID-19. This hour, we are remembering. Amy Buckendahl lives in Des Moines. Her mother-in-law, Donna Breeze, died of COVID-19. She was 76 years old and passed away earlier this month. Amy's with me on the line. Hello, Amy.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for talking with me today. And I'm so sorry for your loss. Can you tell me just a little bit about your mother-in-law?
Well, yeah. So she was always a really funny person as far as, like, she wanted everybody to smile and she was happy. And I guess in comparison, she was sort of like the humorous foil to, like, family gatherings, where we could always count on Donna to, you know, sing a song. She loved to sing, to tell a story. And so she was just really sort of the light of family gatherings. And in comparison to how, you know, her passing, you know, just recently from COVID-19 versus her husband, who passed away a few years ago, it's just a very stark difference in how, as a family, we are able to grieve and to get together. So Donna was, you know, born in Des Moines, and she went to school at Des Moines Technical High School. That's where she met her husband, David Breeze. They got married. They had three kids. And she worked she did odd jobs for a while. She was a secretary. And then later on in her life, one of her favorite jobs was she worked in a hospital. And she was able to work with the neonatal care unit. And so she just loved to be with the babies and to work with the staff and to provide them support, emotional support in that way. And one of the things that was really profound is during that time, she also worked as a hospice caregiver. So she would go into homes of people who were getting toward the ends of their long-term chronic illnesses, and she provided them with care and support while their caregivers were away from home. And so early on, she's like, you know, I just want to make sure that when I get sick and die and pass away from whatever it is, you know, I want my family around me, because she had seen what it was like for those people who were alone and how tough that was.
Oh. Amy, I know that your mother-in-law was living in a care facility. She had Alzheimer's and had been diagnosed a couple of years before she died. Being in a care facility during this pandemic, had you or anybody in the family been able to see her since March?
Well, yeah, and that's the crazy thing. So we weren't, of course, and we were actually, you know, happy with the care that she had received. She had been in the care facility for about 2 years, not quite. It would have been 2 years in April. And she, you know, we formed these really great relationships with the staff. And Donna was, I don't know if she was unique, but she was special in the way that even though her Alzheimer's was pretty debilitating, she kept this really fun outlook. And so a lot of her nurses and a lot of the staff there just really gravitated toward her, because even though she had a lot of things that needed care with, you know, eating, bathing, going to the restroom, she was always, like, good about it, right? She was always upbeat. She was never argumentative. She just wanted to tell funny stories and for people to laugh and smile. Like, that was so, so important to her. And so, you know, when they told us, they called, they said, hey, you know, just out of an abundance of precaution, we're going to close down the facility. You know, we want to just mitigate people coming in and out. We're like, great. You know, the care facility is taking this serious. This is what we want to see. And because at that time we thought, gosh, you know, we'll be over this in a couple of months and things will be back to normal, you know, because at holidays we would get together in the care facility with Donna. We would be able to, like, sing and hang out and play games as a family. You know, we did that at Christmas and Thanksgiving and, you know, just every once in a while, just to make sure that, you know, with all the busyness going on, that we got a chance to experience, you know, her day with her. And so when they closed the facility, you know, we talked to the family and we're like, okay, this is good. And then it was like, okay, well, we can't send her flowers or cards or anything, so let's try calling. And so the nurses really worked really hard to kind of get Donna to, you know, work the phone and maybe do some video chatting. And that became too stressful for her because she was confused about where the voices were coming from. And it was just so much easier in person when we were there. So we called less, you know, because it was just kind of a hard thing for her. And so then But the facility was super great about communicating illnesses. So if someone got sick, they let us know. But then after a while, what had happened is they had stopped the rotational nurses, because in this care facility, and I think a lot of care facilities fall into this, is nurses and doctors are the only ones who can give medicine. And so, of course, the nurses on staff were obviously exhausted after 3 months or 2 months of just being the only people there. And so they brought back in the original staff that were rotating in and out of the care facilities, and they were testing them regularly. And from what I understood, they had a great protocol in place for getting everyone tested regularly, not just the staff coming in, but also the patients that the staff was working with regularly to make sure, you know, they could do contact tracing and things like that to kind of, I guess, follow the kind of trail of COVID. And one of the poor nurses, she did test positive, but she was never sick at any time. She never had a fever. She felt fine. So as soon as we found out that she, or as soon as the staff found out that she had tested positive, then of course she stopped working, and, you know, they tested all of the patients that she had been with and around. And so for a while, no one got sick. None of the patients got sick, but they had a couple of nurses and staff test positive, but man, they were just doing a great job. But about a month and a half ago, maybe about 10 weeks ago, they started having their first patients, the first clients of the facility get sick. And so I think to date, they've had about 14 get sick. And then, of course, Donna passed away just about 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago now. And we just got word that her roommate just recently passed away as well. So, and it's tough because of those things. You know, I chose not to go see her at the end, because the facility was like, look, you know, if you really want to come see her while she's still lucid and you can speak with her, please come. And so my sister, you know, her daughter, my sister-in-law, and my husband, her son, went in to go say their goodbyes. And it was great because they gowned all up, and, you know, they had this great protocol set up with masks and face shields and gowns and booties. And when it was described to me later, you know, I felt really comfortable that they did everything that they could.
Yeah, and I'm so glad they got a chance to see her. But Amy, we are out of time, but thank you so much for telling us about Donna today.
Sure. Yep. Thank you very much.
Amy Buckendahl lives in Des Moines. Her mother-in-law, Donna Breeze, died of COVID-19. She was 76 years old and passed away earlier this month. We're remembering Iowans who've died of COVID-19, like Jay Daniels of West Des Moines, Harry Soliday of Des Moines, Wayoka Idi Wayuka of Des Moines, was only 36 years old, a refugee from Congo. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are taking some time to remember and mourn the more than 1,000 Iowans who've died from COVID-19. All summer long, we've heard these numbers going up and up and up. And in this time of turmoil and separateness, this pandemic, it's easy to forget that there are individuals behind every single one of those numbers. So this hour, we are taking some time to talk about those individuals. And remember, you can join us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Michael Lensing is here with me. He has spent his life helping people mourn. He is the co-owner and director of Lensing Funeral and Cremation Services in Iowa City. Hello, Michael.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And I know that the pandemic has changed your work a great deal. One of the things that has made this so hard is not just for those who've died of COVID, but for everyone who's passed away during this period of time. The kinds of rituals that we normally participate in, the gatherings, the wakes, the funerals, the visitations, we can't do those things like we normally have been. Michael, why do you think those rituals are so important to us when we're mourning?
Well, you know, there's a quote, I wish I could remember exactly who said it, but it says that grief shared is grief diminished. And I truly believe that rituals, and different types of ceremonies, no matter if it's a celebration of life or if it's a mass, a memorial mass, or something at the synagogue, those all bring people together to say goodbye and to celebrate and to remember a life that's been lived. And I think the difficulty during this time period, not just with those who have died with COVID, but with all deaths, is that it's brought about a certain isolation, and it's really halted some people from the ability to grieve or to move through the grieving process. But with that said, I would say that it's also allowed funeral directors and families to be creative and to try to move ahead. I think early in this pandemic, many people were saying, well, we'll do something at a later date. And I'm of the belief that I don't know what date that's going to be.
Yeah.
And so to do what you can at this time, and yet it might be unique in that it's we have to social distance, a term that we've never really talked about much before, or we can Zoom or we can live stream. But all of those things have brought together new types of rituals that really going forward, I think, are here to stay. We've done a number of graveside services. We're now back doing services within churches or different gathering places, but with limited seating. But I think it has allowed us to adapt, and that may be good in many ways because it's reaching for the human spirit and really trying to care for those who are going through a loss.
Losing a loved one is almost always a really difficult experience. I think for many of us, it's easier if a person has had a long life and we feel like it's their time. With, of course, so many deaths, it doesn't feel like it's somebody's time. And with COVID-19 in particular, and you know, we're going to talk about a young man who died at the age of 35 here in a few minutes and left behind 5 children. That's not fair. It's not his time. Michael, what do you do to help families when they just can't take comfort in the idea that this was meant to be?
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with just being honest and direct, and they're right. It isn't fair, and it's really, really trying to give new types of rituals, maybe to work through. I think the most important thing is the support of those around you, And I think the worst thing somebody can really say to somebody going through this, especially to a child, is, you know, they're in a better place, or, you know, time will change and you will get used to this and you'll adjust. And throughout the years, that may be true. But I tend to think with grief, it's something you maybe learn to adjust to, but you never really always. You know, the loss is always so difficult that it is always there. There's this
always
something
a part
missing
of you.
in your heart. And mm-hmm. And so I think it's just a matter of really listening to people, reaching out to people, but allowing each individual to move at their own pace through the grief process. And especially with children, children are very literal, and it is very difficult for children, one moment after a loss, they may be fine or it seems they're fine. The next day they're crying. It's let a child be a child and help them maybe through artwork or different creative processes that might allow them to release some of those feelings.
I mentioned earlier that one of the things that's been hard for me, and I think it's hard for a lot of people, is that we haven't had public displays of mourning. We haven't had those candlelight vigils. We haven't had people gathering together or, you know, listening to our leaders talk about the individuals who've been lost. A funeral is a small gathering to remember one person. But with a loss of this magnitude, Michael, what do you think the value is in those kind of public displays, those you know, bringing strangers together?
Yeah, you know, the one thing it reminds me of is in the 80s during the AIDS pandemic. And granted, that was different, but one of the most healing things that came from that, I think, is from the Names Project, was the quilts, which people gathered in Washington and laid out on the mall. And I thought, and I went to that in 1996, and I always remember the compassion and the sense of intimacy with each person you felt, even though there were thousands of people that had died. And I do agree with you. It's hard because it would be lovely to be able to do something larger, but because of the pandemic, we really can't. And I don't know that I know the answer to that. I think it's like everybody maybe needs to do their own thing. Maybe it is just lighting a candle or, you know, in a window or different sorts of things to bring people together. You're right. It is really hard. It's much better when people can mourn in a larger group.
Well, and I hope that a time will come in the not too distant future when we can really reckon with this loss, and hopefully we can all be back together again.
Right. I do too. I think the one thing it's been interesting for funeral directors is that it's, it's strange when I go to the funeral home in the morning, it's just so quiet. And I know people would always think it's to be that way, but you're used to having people come in. And I think that is really difficult because we've done a couple services. One, I was a young man. We've had a number of younger people pass away, not of COVID, but we did a visitation on the back porch of the funeral home with the video, and the deceased was there and all of that. And everybody came with a mask on and everything. And I was so happy that they did, because at least they were coming to join together to remember this person. And so I think there's been a number of different unique things that funeral homes and funeral directors have done throughout the country, and especially here in Iowa, that I think hopefully will hopefully help those going through that loss.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for talking with me today.
No, thank you very much.
Michael Lensing is co-owner and director of Lensing Funeral and Cremation Services in Iowa City. This hour, we're taking some time to remember and mourn those who've been lost in Iowa to COVID-19. More than 1,000 Iowans have died of COVID-19. And Mel Stommer is one of those Iowans of Coralville. He died last week at the age of 68. He was a retired mailman and a union leader who cared deeply about those in his community. His son, John Stommer, is here with me now. Hello, John.
Hey, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here, and I'm so sorry to hear about your dad.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell me a little bit about your dad. As I mentioned, he was a mailman, and he was a mailman who really loved to get to know the people he was delivering mail to. Tell me a little bit about that part of his life.
Yeah. When I was 9 or 10, he moved down to having just one route instead of the five he was doing. When I was growing up, he would cover for other mailmen's their days off. And I always thought he liked doing the five routes because he could know five times as many people. Even if it was just one day a week, he really made it a point to know everyone. I don't think I ever saw him let anyone pass by without a comment or a little conversation, just everyone on his route.
Wow. Well, and
he knew him and he knew what was going on.
I know that in retirement, he would deliver meals to people that he thought were in need and things like that. But you've said that he did that all along, and when you were younger, sometimes he'd give you an address and say, hey, go to this house and shovel the walk. Tell me about that.
Oh, well, like I said, his route included our home, so if there was ever a snow day, he'd just come home and, you know, tell me a street and a number and the person's name and just send me over there. And he'd do that for mowing. He did way more than I ever did, but yeah, it was just natural to him that one of us would do it.
You may not always have appreciated that when you were younger, but was there a point where you realized really how special your dad was in the community?
Yeah, I always did. I thought it might be like a little bit hard to share him with everybody else, but I liked it. I liked that people looked to him just in a room, you know. He was someone they knew that they could rely on.
He also...
I liked watching that.
Yeah. He was also a union leader. Why was that so important to him?
Just organized labor was... I couldn't even tell you. It was such a part of my life from the time I was born. I grew up at City Federation of Labor meetings, and the local letter carriers branch. Just that was all he wanted to do. Memorial, you know, Labor Day picnics, everything. It just meant a lot to him.
Yeah.
That people be treated fairly and not be pushed around.
When did your dad get sick?
About a month ago, he started to not feel too well, and he was kind of quarantining in the back room of our house. My mom was gone for a few days, but when she got back, they just kind of separated, and she would bring him food. About 4 days of that, and he had to go to the hospital. Yeah, he stopped in at a family health center in North Liberty, and they kind of sent him to the hospital, and he's been there ever since.
A lot of us have been really worried about our parents. I know I worry about my parents during this pandemic. Was this something you were afraid of, or did it kind of hit you from out of the blue?
Until the last couple days, I really thought he was going to make it. You know, he was still really strong, and just I know a lot of older people go on walks to maintain their fitness, but my dad was walking with 10 to 20 different people a week. Like he had a list, and he was always out. He just never lost any of his strength after retirement or anything. And I thought he was going to make it, but for a brief period of time, my mom had it as well, and I couldn't see either of them. So that got me scared a bit.
Yeah. There has been a real outpouring of grief for your dad because everybody in Coralville apparently knew him. Many people in Iowa City, people knew and loved him. And I mentioned earlier how for so many people, there hasn't been a real opportunity for a public display of grief or emotion. But people have made that happen for your dad. I know there was a parade of mail trucks just a couple of days ago. What does that feel like to you? What does that mean to you, this outpouring of grief?
It was really great to see. I always knew that my dad was loved around here, and not just Coralville and Iowa City. He grew up in Tiffin, and the people out there, he knew all of them too. And Tiffin and Oxford and Swisher, Kelowna, we went all over the county when I was growing up, and he just knew everyone everywhere. It was really nice to see people get together for him, and his friend Gary that organized it, and Ben that helped make it happen. Just everybody. It's nice to see.
Obviously, a lot of people knew and loved your dad and knew a lot about him. For those who didn't, what is one thing you want people to know about your father?
Just how important he thought connection was, and just maintaining everyone's connection to the community, people who'd gotten a little bit older and maybe lost some of their loved ones. He just thought it was important that he stopped by with them and let them know that people still cared about them and they were still part of our town.
He sounds like a really special man. Thank you so much for telling us about him today, John.
Yeah, thank you.
John Stommer. His father, Mel Stommer of Coralville, died last week at the age of 68. This hour, we're taking some time to remember and mourn some of the more than 1,000 Iowans who have died of COVID-19. The Gazette, the newspaper in Cedar Rapids, has done a wonderful job collecting the names of Iowans who have died and putting them together with their obituaries and their stories. And I've tweeted out a link to this collection of names. I suggest spending some time and getting to know some of these really remarkable people we've lost, like Antonio Leon. She was 94 of West Des Moines. Retha Sharp died at the age of 98 in Johnston. Jim Orvis of Waterloo was 65 years old. Steve Cremosta of Cedar Rapids was 61. Willie Levi, 73 years old of Waterloo. So many Iowans. We've lost over 1,036. And of course, yesterday we learned that one of those lost was a child under the age of 5. We'll continue our remembrances in a moment, and you are welcome to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're listening to a little bit of the music of Ellis Marsalis, another person we've lost to COVID-19.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
This hour, we're taking some time to remember and mourn the Iowans who've been lost to COVID-19 since we found out about that first Iowan who died on March 24th. It's been 5 months, and we know now that we've lost more than 1,036 Iowans to COVID-19. And of course, the losses continue, and every single one of those numbers represents an individual who loved and was loved. This hour, we're spending some time thinking about those individuals. And my next guest recently lost her mother. Anita Jung is from Iowa City. She lost her 90-year-old mother, Dorothea Jung, to COVID-19. Hello, Anita.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for talking with me today. And tell me a little bit about your mom. She went by Dot, right?
Yes, she did. She was a really outgoing, fun person, very adventurous. On her 90th birthday, she went horseback riding. And she was hoping on her 91st to go on another balloon ride,
oh, wow,
which would have been her second. So she was very, very adventurous, and she was also very kind and very interested in the people around her. She was pretty extraordinary.
You lost her early in the pandemic. You lost her in April. And I know so many of us were just blindsided by this virus and how quickly it spread and where it showed up during that time. When did you learn that your mother was sick?
My mother lived with my sister, and my sister noticed as she was getting her ready for bed that she seemed warm. And that was on the 10th. It was the day before Easter. It was the day after my sister's birthday. And so my mom, she called the doctor, and they admitted her to the hospital and she did have pneumonia. And she rallied. I mean, it was so almost textbook, the experience of it. Luckily, my mother was very cognitive, and she had a do not resuscitate, and she stated she did not want to be ventilated. And she died on the 18th, and that was a week before her 91st birthday.
It sounds like she was an adventurous and vibrant woman up till the end. What was she like as a mom when you were littler?
She was very adventurous. She loved horses, and so we all learned how to ride. And at one point, this was in the 70s, she had to move a small colt, a small foal, And she did it in the back seat of her Cadillac, which I always think is sort of telling of what kind of a mom. We always had lots of animals, dogs and rabbits and lots of pets. So she, you know, she didn't let obstacles get in her way. She was definitely a problem solver and very unconventional.
It sounds like she was a lot of fun and just a really bright and wonderful woman. I'm sure you carry so much of that with you every day.
Absolutely. I just, you know, really grateful. She was a really, up until the end, she was actually very thoughtful and loving and sweet and accepting. She demonstrated incredible grace throughout her experience, just in aging, but even with COVID, I have no doubt that she knew every single one of her caregivers' names. She knew if they had kids. She knew if they were married. And that's just who she was.
Anita, thank you so much for sharing your mother's story and a little bit of her with us today.
Sure. Thank you.
Anita Jung lives in Iowa City. She lost her 90-year-old mother to COVID-19 back in April, Dorothea Jung. And this hour, we're taking some time to remember and mourn the Iowans we've lost to COVID-19. We'd love to hear from you as well. If you've lost a loved one, please give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Now, of course, this virus is not just a virus. It doesn't just take people from us. It has affected everything from the way we live, the way we work, and our political situation. It is also, in many cases, a news story. And Ryan Foley has been covering many COVID-related stories. He is a news correspondent with the Associated Press. He's based in Iowa City. He's been writing about the pandemic and the people who have died from COVID-19. He's on the line with me now. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I know that in your work, you are not just writing about the people who've died, but exploring the politics and the dangers of COVID-19 and covering workplace safety issues. How do you think about this really enormous loss that we've had? Now, I just saw the latest numbers, 1,039 Iowans lost to COVID-19. How do you think about that as a person, not just as a reporter?
Yeah, I mean, the sheer amount of loss across the state of Iowa has just been staggering. I mean, I've covered deaths in pretty much every corner of the state, from, you know, Sioux City to Columbus Junction, from Des Moines to Dubuque. And like you mentioned, each one of those people, you know, has a tremendous story, and they leave behind loved ones, and they made impact on life for so many people. So it's hard to even fathom how big this loss really is.
One of the stories that you have been covering are the losses of people who have been working in our meatpacking plants. And of course, as I mentioned, I mean, there's workplace safety issues, but there are also political issues. There are stories that aren't getting told because people don't want them to be told. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the people that you have written about who have worked in our meatpacking industry who've died?
Yes, I was really struck back in April when I was doing some reporting in Waterloo on the outbreak at the Tyson Foods plant that ended up infecting more than 1,000 of their workers at that one plant. And I learned that there was a duplex on Randolph Street in Waterloo where the two tenants who lived at this duplex, both of them died within days of each other of COVID. One of them was Jim Orvis. He was 65. He worked at the Waterloo plant for many years in the laundry department. And his neighbor was 51-year-old Arthur Scott, who went by his nickname Dante. And he worked at the Tyson dog food factory in Independence. And just the idea that within a matter of days, that the two individuals living in this duplex could be gone was stunning to their neighbors, to their landlord, and to me as a reporter.
Oh, absolutely. We've also seen so many individuals in nursing homes die. And of course, we were talking about that earlier in the hour with Amy Buckendahl, who lost her mother-in-law, Donna Brees, who was living in a nursing home. And that's a really heart-wrenching situation to cover because so many of these people were separated from their families in their final days. Can you tell me maybe about one or two of the people you've been able to tell stories about?
Just the first big outbreak that I covered was the Heritage Specialty Care outbreak in Cedar Rapids, where 26 residents at that one home ended up dying from COVID. But since then, there have been many others across the state, and more than half of the deaths, total deaths in Iowa, have been in these nursing home outbreaks. And I have talked to families who, they aren't happy about the way that it's been managed. The virus has been able to get inside these homes. I remember speaking with the daughter of a man who died at a nursing home in Oskaloosa, who was just very upset that this happened to her father.
In talking about writing obituaries of people who've died of COVID, we've discovered in the past that a lot of people don't want to talk about the fact that their loved one died of COVID-19 or don't want to share that. Putting cause of death in an obituary is not a requirement anymore. And a lot of people don't want people to know that there's some stigma to the disease, but also because it has been so politicized, people don't want to be blamed for their loved one getting COVID-19, or they just don't want to deal with any of the blame or the shame. And I'm curious, in reporting the story, have you run into that? Is that a real barrier for people being willing to talk?
Yes, it's interesting. I have run into that a little bit. But on the flip side, I've also run into, a substantial number of people who are willing to talk and share their stories because they want people to know that this virus is deadly, that it should be taken very seriously. And they want to share, the stories of their loved ones and give them sort of a proper public remembrance. So I actually have been struck by the amount of cooperation that I've received during my reporting on this around the state.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks for having the show.
Ryan Foley is a news correspondent with the Associated Press based in Iowa City. He's been writing about COVID-19 and about some of the people lost as well. Another loss, Zach Overy of North English died on July 7th, about 3 weeks after he was diagnosed with COVID-19. He was only 35 years old, a father of five. And Mitch Fick is a morning anchor with Iowa News Now, KGAN. He helped to tell his story and interviewed his widow, Jennifer Hansen. He's on the line with me now. Hello, Mitch.
Good morning, Charity. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I know you've told a lot of stories about people who have been lost to COVID-19, but I have to imagine that the story of Zach Overy is one that has stuck with you. Just a devastating loss, only 35 years old. Tell me a little bit about this family.
Well, they're a pretty incredible family. Even when you get past just the notion of a 35-year-old, a guy who was 13 months older than I, passing away from this virus so viciously, one of the bright spots of covering his death is learning his life and his love story with his wife, Jen, who was so gracious in letting me share that story of these two kids, so to speak, that got married 9 or 10 months after they met in August of 2007 and celebrated 12 years of marriage back on May 1st. They settled in small town Iowa after they kind of had this whirlwind romance where they figured out, yeah, this is it, and didn't want to waste any time starting that life together and raising four sons in Jackson, Eli, Cam, and Kai, and a 10-year-old girl in Addie. And I know that Jen tells me that Zach was so proud to be a girl dad, you know, and that's always, you know, you have four boys in the family and then you throw a girl in, that can be a lot for a father, but it sounds like he just thrived in that role and she was and is heavily involved at Melinda's Dance Studio, which is a very well-known dance studio in Iowa County. And it sounds like he just loved getting to be a dance dad too. And what Jen and Zach had together and what Jen continues to carry on as mother to his children is just such a beautiful thing. And the types of things that can easily get lost when deaths become a stat and not stories. And when there's almost 1,040 people that are dead, that's a lot of stories that impact so many families and so many friends. And for Jen to allow us to share her story and Zach's story is, it's not just part of the healing process, but it's just such an important honor and one of the most humbling things that we as journalists can do.
Seeing the pictures of the two of them with their kids is so moving. They were clearly just such a vibrant, fun, energetic family, five kids and two young parents. And of course, just shocked that this could happen to them. I think that's something that so many people take away from that situation, that a 35-year-old man could get sick and 3 weeks later die. That's really a hard, hard one to swallow. And Mitch, we have another call that I want to get to before the end of the hour, but thank you for sharing Zach's story with us.
Thank you for having me and having this show today. I think, as I said, it's vitally important.
Mitch Fick is a morning anchor with Iowa News Now at KGAN. And of course, he's been telling a lot of stories of those lost to COVID-19. Before we're out of time this hour, I want to bring Gail on the line from Winterset. Hello, Gail.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. And Gail, you lost your father to COVID-19. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Yes. My dad was an artist. He was born here in Iowa and raised in San Francisco, and he did beautiful paintings, and very proud of my dad. He got Alzheimer's and went to the nursing home 3 years ago, and I received a call on May 6th from the nursing home telling me that my dad had passed away, that he had a stroke, had blood clots. And when I pressed for more information, they told me that he was COVID positive.
And we know that many COVID patients have died of stroke. That seems to be something that happens to a lot of people with this virus. It must have been so hard to lose him in this way. Gail, what do you want people to know about your dad, Lewis Hayes?
That my dad had personality plus. He was at home. He was an artist, and he would stop everyone on the sidewalk for an iced tea and visit and laugh and tell stories. He was an avid sportsman. He was a gun enthusiast, and he would like to shoot, go target shooting with people in the area. He lived in Madison County when we were in Iowa his entire life. He restored a home that had been condemned, a stone limestone home that his previous uncle many generations ago had built.
Oh, wow.
And he brought it back from being condemned, and we lived in it our entire life.
Gail, thank you so much for sharing your memories of your dad, Lewis Hayes. This hour, we've been talking about those who've been lost to COVID-19 in Iowa. More than 1,039 Iowans lost to COVID-19. And we're going to go out this hour with the voice of John Prine, another voice that has been silenced by this virus. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
And I remember every night your ocean as a blue, how I miss you in the morning.